Chapter 10. News from Ultramar. As the fleet underwent repairs and resupply ships flew in from across the sector to provision the Crusade, so work was begun on the surface of 108 Beta Calipus 9.2. Battlefield scrap was taken away, the bodies of the traitors burnt. When all trace of the fighting was gone, the site of victory was prepared for the triumph of Rorqos. Flocks of autopraisers flew over the bare earth, singing hymns, while priests in floating pulpits shouted out blessings to cleanse the ground of unclean influences. Staggered lines of giant machines scraped the ground flat under dozer blades 50 meters wide. Behind them came large tankers with fanned moors that sprayed liquid rockcrete behind them. Following the tankers, an army of men with rakes and brushes labored to spread the rockcrete flat before it could set. Dozens of artisans watched over them, their servo skulls and slaved cyber beasts measuring the flatness of the foundations for the esplanade in a pulsed storm of laser light. As the screed set, servitors followed, laying a complex mosaic of colored stones brought from all over the sector in cement dribbled by their nozzle-handed fellows. Finally came trucks fitted with brushes and polishing limbs. In this way, the rocky plain was replaced by a huge martial square 3 miles across, decorated with a giant mosaic. The plaza at the valley mouth was just the beginning. Machines labored at the face of the hills. Demolition walkers tore down the wall of the Iron Warriors. Before they had dismantled half of it, work started on a huge proscenium at the site of the wall's central gate. It framed the valley with huge pillars and a pediment from which the statues of imperial heroes gazed. The noise of industry was tremendous, echoing across the plains for hundreds of miles. The activity continued up into orbit. Lines of landing freighters came down from the sky, bearing workers and materials. Gilliman watched his plans being put into action from the viewing deck of a bulky construction crawler. Felix had done his job well. The machines outside were not the great geoplaners of old, but they were adequate to the task. The captain had learned much. Felix was unaware of his own talent. The Primaris Space Marine would need it all soon enough. Gilliman was waiting while the latest in a line of nervy architects bobbed and fussed over his plans, preparing them for the Primarch's inspection. A pile of blueprints held in place with carved stone weights had already accumulated on the deactivated chart table. Rather more sober were the military engineers, awaiting their turn. Upon their devices, the complexities of the new chapter fortress to be raised over the Iron Warrior's stronghold were stored.
"My lord,"
a sculptor with a fixed, terrified smile approached Gilliman. The Primarch turned from the low, angled windows to view a hololith of a frieze for the arch. The man stuttered and mumbled his way through the presentation. His talents in design were great, those in interpersonal communication less so, and Gilliman was glad when Captain Felix came into the cramped room. The artists were almost as scared of Felix as they were of Gilliman, and scattered before him. Felix coughed, beckoned, and whispered into the Primarch's ear when he bent his head. Gilliman frowned and nodded.
"Gentlemen, this will have to wait until later. I will see all your plans today, I promise. Please, while you wait, Captain Felix will arrange some refreshments for you."
Felix's brows drew together in consternation. The crawler's provisions amounted to tepid recycled water and emergency biscuit rations. Gilliman trusted him to organize something. If anyone could source suitable victuals from nowhere, Felix could. The expression on Felix's face was almost comical. Gilliman resisted the urge to reassure him. The Primaris captain had to learn to trust his own abilities.
"This way,"
Felix said, herding the artists into the crawler's small stateroom.
"I shall see if we can find some wine."
The artists and architects filtered through the door with unsure glances behind them. When they were all through, Gilliman addressed Felix.
"Thank you, Captain. I shall not be long."
"He is outside, my lord."
Gilliman left the crawler deck. The machine was a civilian construction pattern intended for large-scale works. Comfort had not been a high priority in its design. It was cramped enough for a standard human, and Gilliman had to stoop to negotiate its corridors, bending almost double to squeeze his way through the doors. Outside the sound-screened command deck, the thunder of the machine's inner workings made itself known. Gilliman's ears buzzed to the sound of thumping pistons. The crawler was idling at that moment. The din it made while it was in motion was almost astounding in volume. Gilliman stopped outside the master's cabin and knocked on the door. The master was made of sterner material than the artist's and looked only mildly surprised to see the Imperial Regent standing outside his private chamber.
"We have not finished, Master Fulpin," said Gilliman. "I have received a visitor."
"My command deck is yours, as long as you require it, my lord," said Fulpin, with a smart bow. "I welcome the rest."
Gilliman peered past the man's shoulder. His room was crammed with papers and data slates.
"Your idea of rest accords with mine," said Gilliman. "No rest."
"Service to the Emperor never finishes, my lord," said Fulpin. "There is always more to do."
Gilliman nodded.
"I will send word when we are done."
He left the master and continued down the corridor. The crew were taking their unscheduled rest more in earnest than their leader. Loud conversation emanated from the crawler's common room as he passed it, the men inside laughing and playing musical instruments, ignorant that the master of the Imperium was only a few meters from them. He followed steps downwards, emerging from a double gate set behind the crawler's dozer blade. He picked his way over massive hydraulic systems and emerged onto the plain. An ultramarine of the old type stood waiting for him, his crested helm held under one arm. His armour had already acquired a layer of dust, but the green trim of the fourth company shone beneath, and his honours were so numerous that his rank was without doubt.
"Captain Ventress," said Gilliman, walking to stand beside him. "My apologies for keeping you waiting. You have come a long way to see me."
Ventress turned and dropped to his knee.
"My Lord Primarch."
He bowed his head and kept his eyes on the floor.
"Please, my son," said Gilliman. "You need not bow before me."
Ventress remained kneeling.
"My lord, forgive me. I have not had the honor of meeting you. My company tried to return when you were reawoken, but by the time I reached Macragge, you had left." "Performing your duty is not an error, Captain. I do not accept your apology, for there is no need for one."
"It somehow feels important that I should have been there."
"You are here now," said Gilliman.
He took a step towards Ventress, his hand out.
"Please."
The captain did not rise.
"I have spoken with my brothers about you. Listen to everything they had to report. Not a word of it does justice to actually being here. I have wished with all my being to stand in your presence, but I did not expect this. I expected to feel something. To see a Primarch is something from her tale, I thought. But this is no fiction, and I am confounded."
"You may stand."
But, my lord, I cannot stand."
Ventress looked up at Gilliman, his battle-worn face made young by wonder.
"Then I command you to stand," said Gilliman.
Ventress's reaction touched and irritated him equally.
"Look upon me as a father, not as a lord. You are of my line, and a son to me."
"As you command."
Aurel Ventress stood slowly, his armor's motive systems growling loudly, as if they too were awestruck. The captain searched the face of his gene father. Gilliman looked down on him. Ventress wore long service bars in his forehead. His skin was coarsened with age, and for all his meek reaction, the Primarch could sense the defiance in him, the rage, the desire to serve. The spell broke. Ventress smiled a little sheepishly.
"Severus warned me about this," he said, shaking his head. "He warned me, and I did not believe him. I will not lose my head," I told him. "I can see his face now when I tell him that I did."
Ventress stood tall and saluted. My apologies. Captain Agerman was right.
It is nothing, said Gilliman.
He held out his hand. Ventress reached out and grasped it firmly, unhesitant now.
I am pleased to make your acquaintance, finally. Your reputation precedes you.
Not all of it is good, my lord, said Ventress.
If rules and customs remain unbroken, Uriel, then they become meaningless, either brittle from misuse, or so strong and overwhelming that they become walls to the mind, blocking out the truth of what it is they were intended to protect. I assume you have been sent to represent Lord Khalgar at the Triumph. You must also have a message for me if you interrupt my important work with the architects.
Ventress dipped his head in a bow.
I have. The war in Ultramar has entered a new phase. Three large forces have issued forth from the Scourge Stars. The Endurance, the ship of Mortarion, Lord of the Death Guard, leads a fleet towards Ultramar.
Gilliman was not surprised.
It was only a matter of time. With Magnus abroad in the Imperium again, I expected more of my brothers to leave their fortresses behind and venture out once more.
Gilliman looked away, thinking.
Has Mortarion actually been seen? Deception was not favored by him when last we met, but he has had long years to learn new tricks.
He has been seen, my lord. He appeared in person at the sacking of Daedalus. An astropathic message was sent with Pict encoding. Once the metaphors were processed, we had a good image of him.
Daedalus. What was the fate of that world?
High casualties and large amounts of toxicity. Disease is rife where Mortarion's dogs go. They poison the earth, though once they move on, their influence dies somewhat. The pollution they bring is not entirely natural and requires the presence of the traitors to remain virulent, or so Lord Tigurius says. Tigurius was the Ultramarine's chief librarian, Ultramar's most potent psyker. That being said, they bring mundane pestilence with them also. Daedalus will take years to recover.
He did not destroy the world.
No, my lord. He attacked, slaughtered the auxilia there, and withdrew before we could respond.
Then he shows himself deliberately, said Gilliman. Daedalus has little strategic importance. He is seeking to draw you out and put you on guard.
He has done more than that. We have reports of his presence in four of the core systems. Wherever he goes, rebellion follows. Lately, he has changed his approach and gathered a large fleet to himself. He is holding position in the Macragge system itself. His fleet is too large for defense fleets to directly engage, but too small to attack the Macraggian prime world. Ardium is blockaded and two of its hives under attack. His presence has led to a wave of unrest across all six planets of the home system. Our people are not immune to the draw of chaos. We spend much of our time putting down death cults or dealing with outbreaks of disease. Under the cover of these distractions, he sends in small strike teams to attack crucial infrastructure. I would not say that Macragge is under siege, but it is close to being so.
What is his game, I wonder?
Mused Gilliman to himself, his voice dwindling to a whisper.
These attacks, he said firmly, they appear random, but they will not be.
My Lord Khalgar assumed so. He is yet to determine their intent.
Gilliman appeared displeased.
These are poor tidings, said Gilliman. But Espandor is not yet taken.
Espandor stands, said Ventress. The enemy has been gradually escalating their attacks on Espandor Prime, but 5th Captain Felion has thwarted them all, and they have not been able to make sufficient gains elsewhere that would allow the traitors to concentrate their assets and overwhelm the system. While its supply lines are open, Espandor will not fall.
That is at least something.
My lord, I do not mean to dampen your mood, but Espandor cannot hold out for long. All the system worlds besides the Prime are in the hands of the foe, and their ships resupply freely there.
Hmm, said Gilliman, once more lapsing into thought. Come with me, he said abruptly.
The Primarch set off alongside the crawler. 16 giant wheels lined the side, twice Gilliman's height, their hard plastic treads caked with sand.
What is the composition of the other forces?
A smaller fleet of Death Guard ships terrorizes the outer regions, replied Ventress. The lead vessel appears to be the Terminus Est. This is the ship of...
Kallus Typhon, first captain of the Death Guard.
That was once his name, so the legends go. He is known as Typhus to us.
Yes, of course, said Gilliman.
Typhus's fleet is of lesser concern, continued Ventress, though he has already taken the star fortress of Eumenes and is concentrating his attacks against the others. We can be thankful that where he goes, Mortarion does not. Most of the Death Guard congregate around their traitor Primarch. The larger danger is posed by a demonic horde. They are slipping in and out of real space at will, and we do not know how. Lord Tigurius has undertaken a mission to the outer reaches to determine the reason. The demons have returned to the Empyrean for the moment, but the warp grows turbulent around Ultramar, and the Librarius and our astropaths are certain that they will return. The enemy is planning something, my Lord Khalgar is sure. Tartella was ravaged recently by the demons. The governor survived, but reports casualty rates of over 98%. The demon leading this force has been identified as Kugath, the one that calls itself the Plague Father. Further sightings have been made in three other systems, always fleeting, but verifiable. Furthermore, they are close after or simultaneously with those of Mortarion. Ventress stopped and looked at his genesire earnestly. My lord, Mortarion and his demonic allies are engaged in something ill-favored. Ultramar is in peril. When I departed, there were 106 active warfronts across the realm. Of course, this number changes all the time. 14 days have passed in Ultramar since we left, at my best calculation. That is long enough for the situation to alter, and I fear for the worse.
Your report gives me an adequate picture of the challenges faced by Lord Khalgar, said Gilliman. You were entrusted to deliver this to me personally, to prevent the information falling into enemy hands, I take it.
There have been too many instances of the enemy anticipating our moves, my lord, replied Ventress. We do not know how, but they are intercepting and accurately interpreting our astropathic sendings. For the most delicate messages, we have come to rely on messenger ships.
Mortarion wants to force my return to Ultramar, said Gilliman. I will have no choice but to respond.
They continued, passing out of the shadow of the command crawler, and came to where the Square of Triumph began. The plain ended at a low wall. Above the level of the sand, the gleaming plaza began. A mile away, the great machines continued their work extending it. The weak sunlight of 108 Beta Calipus 9.2 made feeble attempts to penetrate the pall of dust thrown up by their remodeling of the world. The air was thin but breathable, and through it a cold, soft wind blew, scattering sand over the freshly polished tiles.
Nothing lasts,
said Gilliman, watching the gleam of the stone tesserae dulling under the falling dust.
Our efforts are too often temporary.
He was quiet a moment. Ventress waited expectantly.
Tell me, Captain Ventress, what is the progress of the reconsolidation of Greater Ultramar?
That is another story, said the captain reluctantly. We are being obstructed in our efforts. Disputes as to what was in Ultramar and what was not are delaying plans to reconstitute the 500 worlds as it was in your day. Recalcitrant commanders are exploiting our ignorance. Our historical record is incomplete, my lord. We do not have a definitive map of Ultramar during your time. The mapper Gilimanus in the Library of Ptolemy was damaged millennia ago. The surviving complete maps show the realm at various stages of expansion, or after your division of it, but not at Ultramar's height. Many of the documents you drew up to grant sovereignty to local planetary commanders are lost. But things progress. We believe 3/4 of the ancient realm of Ultramar is back under the direct stewardship of Macragg.
Lord Khalgar has a list I drew from memory, said Gilliman. It carries my seal and the full weight of Imperial authority. I have a map inset into the window of my Hall of Armaments. Khalgar has a copy of it. There is nothing to argue about.
Some of the worlds dispute the proof. They are more than glad to welcome our warriors, but the Imperial commanders in 2 dozen systems quibble over reaffirming their oaths of loyalty. In one case, we have had an outbreak of intra-system civil war over the issue, where one lord has declared for you and 3 against. Some lie outright, telling us they were never part of Ultramar. Perhaps some of them sincerely believe it. A few are braver and insist the ancient treaties cannot be revoked, even by you, my lord, and are determined to retain their independence.
They are wrong, said Gilliman.
Ventress watched a small wheeled transport speed across the plaza towards the construction line, throwing up a plume of settled dust that drifted back down as it passed. They are disquieted by the fate of some of their peers.
Only those who rule poorly have anything to fear, said Gilliman.
It is, naturally, the more autocratic rulers who oppose your rescinding of their independence.
Then they only delay the inevitable, said Gilliman. They will fall into line and ask politely for mercy, or they will be executed.
He watched a giant earthshaper grind an outcropping of rock flat in an instant, belching out a fine spray of pulverized stone. A furnace on its trailer puffed smoke as it baked the harvested material into rockcrete powder. The stone would soon be returned to the plane in this new form by the Foundation teams. 108 Beta Calipus 9.2 world was so barren. He pitied the Space Marines he would station here, but places like the Pit of Raucus needed guarding. Countless baseline humans and transhumans suffered to maintain the watch upon the Imperium's new, terrifying borders.
I should never have set the 500 free, he said suddenly.
My lord, said Ventress.
I should not have done it,
repeated Gilliman, gesturing expressively as he spoke.
I thought I was doing the right thing. I thought I was following the Emperor's wishes, letting men rule the affairs of men.
He gave a rueful smile.
After I implemented the Codex Astartes and split the Legion, I thought it impossible for a force of 1,000 Battle Brothers to effectively govern such a large realm and perform their primary duty as guardians of the Imperium. My legion was gone, and I did not want the chapter that continued their traditions to become insular. They would have been distracted, perhaps never left Ultramar, had they 500 worlds to govern.
Maybe, said Ventress.
Perhaps we could have managed, my lord. I think your decision was wise. Was it wise? Said Gilliman.
He abruptly began walking again, turning around the rear of the crawler to where the untouched plains began. In that direction, there was little evidence of the battle or of construction. Away from the industry of change, 108 Beta Calipus 9.2 looked as it probably had done for millions of years, cold, flat, and mostly lifeless. Like Mars in the time before man. The temperature had dropped a few degrees in the last century. What did that mean to a place like this? A little more frost, a little less light. Without intervention, the sun would eventually go out, and 108 Beta Calipus 9.2 would freeze completely. There would be no one to care.
I am no longer convinced, continued Gilliman. One of my sons, a man much like you, as it happens, once warned me against pride. I thought I had avoided his vices, but there are many kinds of pride, and it had a part to play in my decision to shrink Ultramar. You see, I wanted the Ultramarines to be out there among the stars. I wanted their legacy to continue.
He stopped again, sweeping his gaze across the desert's low, mournful hills.
Does that make me selfish, my son?
Ventress did not know what to say.
the Primarch continued.
There was a more practical consideration. I did not wish to set the precedent of chapters of Space Marines ruling large portions of the Imperium. What good would it have been to remove the use of legions from potential tyrants, only to turn the legionaries into tyrants themselves? By his actions, the Emperor made it clear that governorship of the Imperium was to be undertaken by mortal men, not by the Adeptus Astartes. If the Ultramarines were left masters of the 500 worlds, it opened a potential avenue of corruption. I would not have the existence of Ultramar be the spur to the creation of 1,000 small empires, because I could not trust the Adeptus Astartes to replicate what we have at home. Warriors make poor lords. The likes of the Empire of Iron was the more likely outcome than a crop of new Ultramars. The reference to the Iron Warriors' short-lived heresy-era realm was lost on Ventress, but he kept his silence while the Primarch continued to speak. Gilliman looked to the sky. Past the veils of dust, the atmosphere was so thin that the brightest stars shone in the day, and the lights of ships in orbit were clearly visible.
And yet, I return to life and find the entire Imperium a prison for its people. By avoiding one problem, I created another. If I had left Ultramar intact, more worlds would have been havens from such pain and remained centers of reason. A bigger beacon burns brighter. I should have left it whole, as an example of what can be.
The Primarch turned to his son.
You are so many generations removed from the original founding. You remain true to the Imperium. The dedication of the Ultramarines is a testament to the spirit of Ultramar and the will of the Emperor. It would have been better had more worlds been in your keeping. You must understand why I did what I did. I watched half my brothers fall to chaos and became determined that no one should ever hold the power of a legion again. I became obsessed with the potential misuse of a few 100,000 Space Marines, and in doing so, I forgot about the petty self-interest of lesser men. This is I, whose preoccupation was to hurry the Great Crusade to an end so that I could get on with the business of peace. He laughed at himself.
Perhaps I would have failed there. These rulers who deny my seal and my right to revoke our treaties, they are not evil. They are perhaps not even stupid. They are simply limited, as all men are limited.
Gilliman fell silent, then smiled sadly.
Does it shock you, my son, to learn a Primarch can err?
Ventress looked uncomfortable.
My heart says yes, but that Primarchs can be mistaken is an obvious conclusion when the argument is reasoned through, my lord, said Ventress.
Your admission does nothing to lessen my respect for you. We of the Ultramarines remain human despite our transformation. We make mistakes. As a son grows, he learns that his father is not infallible, whether he is glorious or humble.
Sometimes I wonder if I am human at all, said Gilliman thoughtfully, in any meaningful sense.
If you were not, you would not care for the fate of other men.
Many of my brothers did not. Maybe it is an affectation.
Humanity is not measured on form alone, but by deeds, my lord, said Ventress.
A mortal man may be inhuman towards other men, yet I have seen Xenos behave with honor and fairness when we offer them nothing but hate.
Gilliman appraised the fourth captain carefully.
You impress me, Captain Ventress. I have heard much about your deeds. I did not expect you to be so thoughtful.
Your teachings persist, my lord, said Ventress modestly. We strive to be more than warriors, but wise men also who would rule fairly for the good of the greatest number.
Yet the day when my son shall set aside their weapons seems impossible now, the Primarch replied. That was always my intention. After the Great Crusade, you were all to become administrators and statesmen.
He laughed again.
It seems so naive. Look at this.
He gestured to the baleful light of the pit smeared by the dusty air. An explosion rumbled out from the hills where the walls had closed the valley. A slope collapsed, leaving a blank stone cliff. Before the detritus had finished rolling out from the base, servitor excavators were clearing the rubble and scaffolds being wheeled into position for the artisans who would carve the bedrock into statues.
"How are your Primaris brothers faring?"
said Gilliman, returning to matters of war.
"They are a wonder, my lord, and Lord Khalgar sends his personal thanks that you provided them to us so quickly. Ultramar is stronger for their presence, in battle and in other ways. Wherever they go, they bring great heart to our warriors. Whether they are Ultramarines, reinforcements for other chapters, or new Primaris foundings, they are your sons at heart. Some of them remember the days when you walked among us. To hear some of their stories is remarkable. Additionally, their presence has helped with several cases of dissension from the planetary commanders of Greater Ultramar. They speak so eloquently of the ancient days and of the unity of the old Ultramar that several governments saw that their opposition to reunification was not to the taste of their peoples. Peaceful means do not elude us in all disputed cases.
This is a war. All weapons are valid, Captain Ventress. Propaganda is one, and what I have done is still propaganda, even if it is the truth.
Your frankness is a credit.
There have been too many lies, said Gilliman.
And this work here, my lord, this is also a weapon?
A triumph is a statement. I ape the exaltation of horrors at Ulanor, maybe, but such displays are important. This crusade is over. It should be disbanded properly. We have no lasting victory. The Imperium teeters on the brink still, but I will make the Indomitus Crusade seem like one.
Gilliman turned back to the plain being rapidly transformed to gleaming martial ground.
I know why you have come to me, Captain. I cannot return home, not yet. The Indomitus Crusade must be ended in good order, its constituent parts divided and commanded well. I cannot hasten through this process. The people of the galaxy cannot see me running home the moment Ultramar is in danger. Soon I will ask so much of them. For generations they have oiled the machines of war with their blood. They have wet the harvest ground with their tears. They have sent their children to die in the Imperial armies. This is but the least I shall be forced to ask of them in the coming centuries. What I have won here is just the beginning. To conclude this endless war will require sacrifice from everyone, man, woman, and child. I need to show them we can win, that I am in control. I cannot do that if I leave now.
What of Mortarion, my lord? Asked Ventress. He threatens Ultramar itself.
Ultramar is not the Imperium, said Gilliman softly. If it were, perhaps none of this would ever have happened. But it has. Ultramar is crucial to my plans, but I cannot be seen to favor my own home over the worlds of every other sector. Fear not, Captain. I will return. I will drive my brother away from Ultramar, and I swear that when I leave to free the rest of the Imperium, the realm will be better organized, better fortified, and better able to deal with whatever may come in the future. But that time is not yet. Tell Lord Khalgar to hold the line. I trust him to ensure Macragge will still be there when I come home.
Ventress bowed. I shall have your response sent immediately. Gilliman held up his hand. His earpiece was buzzing.
Captain Felix, he said, can you not encourage our guests to wait a little longer? It is not for their sake that I interrupt you, my lord,
voxed Felix.
There is a priority request from the palace. Master Astropath Locenti has received a message from Archmagos Call. I will attend immediately. Make my apologies to the architects. Have the plans for the chapter fortress sent to my scriptorium. I will examine them tonight.
He turned to the fourth captain.
Forgive me, Ventress, but I must leave. It appears I am in demand today.
Rabute Gilliman sent a message to his personal shuttle, commanding the crew to make ready for flight, and departed, leaving Captain Ventress alone to watch a battleground transformed into a symbol of imperial might.